Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Here we go, Cofield the Company here on a Tuesday. Steve Cofield, Griffin is with me here in the Findlay Toyota Studios. Week one of the NFL. Take the deep breath, right? It's here. So we got the Raiders taking on the Patriots. We'll get into that. We'll have picks and analysis later on from a bunch of different folks. Our Tuesday Gambling Insider, Sammy P, coming up in about an hour and 20 minutes. But this was a good weekend. Week one of college football. If you listened on Friday, you know that I was in Houston getting ready to cover the Rebels game against Sam Houston State. We'll get into that win, but as Dan Mullen said in his press conference yesterday, still a lot of work to do, and they don't have a lot of time because now they got to shore things up as a very wounded Big Ten team comes into Allegiant Stadium in UCLA. So we'll have some Mullen reaction from his Monday press conference in less than half an hour. Well, I thought this was a great weekend. I thought the official opening weekend for college football was dynamite, and much of it played to what I've been saying the last couple of years. And I am going to crow about this. And will I admit I'm wrong? No, because this is like a 5 or 6 year play that I laid out a couple of years ago when I tried to tell everyone with NIL and with the transfer portal, college football is going to change forever, and it's going to change for the better. Now, it might not change for the better for TV folks and ratings right out of the gates, but it's going to open up college football a lot more. It's going to balance college football a lot more. Now, that doesn't mean there's 27 schools that can win the national title, but the thought that there's like five is wrong. So I'll build on that in just a little bit with Alabama and their opening game loss. But Griffin, you remember what I texted you over the weekend? I didn't text you too many times, but I texted you something about the weekend and what makes America great.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit right in the middle of that shellacking Alabama was going through against FSU, and I remember reaching out to you just saying, you know, whoa, crazy weekend. You replied back. You said, "This is what makes this country great."
I think I said more accurately, weekends like this make America great, and it's weekends when places like Alabama have to cry in their beer. A school like Alabama, this inflated nonsense that the SEC puts out, which is all based on a flawed system from the last 20 years or so, and the whole system has changed, and winning is not guaranteed anymore. It just is not. Depth doesn't stay around. Quarterbacks don't stay around. I tried to point out over the summer repeatedly, there's going to be all these Goliaths around college football that have new quarterbacks, in some cases have new coaches. And in Alabama's case, they lost the greatest coach in the history of college football. The next guy coming in, no matter how good he was going to have a tough time. But before we get to any of that, here's the other thought. This belief that the NFL is the major leagues and college football is the minor leagues when it comes to head coaching. And it's just not true. They're different. Do I think the NFL has some of the best coaches in the world? Yes. Do I think most NFL coaches can go down to college football, and I say down because that's the way it's looked at, go down to college football and be immediate successes? I do not believe that. Can they go down and be eventual successes? I'm not even sure I believe that. I think a handful can do it, and there's only been a handful who have done both. Pete Carroll's certainly one of them, right? But college football is hard. It is, and it is the hardest era ever now with so much movement on your roster. It's harder than the NFL. The NFL has free agency, but you have contracts that can go out to 5 years, so there is some stability. Hell, when you're going to lose a guy, Can you imagine if every major college football program in the country was like, quarterback's leaving? Franchise tag. You can't go. You get the money that the top five quarterbacks, the average, the top five quarterbacks in the country, that would mean the quarterbacks who are franchise tag would get a lot of money, but you'd restrict movement. And really, it's not legal. That is collectively bargained in the NFL, so restricting movement is, I guess, legal. Because the courts don't mess with most things that are collectively bargained. Well, in college football, it's not collectively bargained. So right now, it's a free-for-all. Now, that can help you. I think one of the great success stories, and because we are in Sports Siberia, and people just don't pay attention to what goes on in Las Vegas, Raiders have helped that. VGK has helped that. But other stuff on the ground here, most people outside the market still have no idea. It's as if we're 8,000 miles away from civilization. What UNLV did the last couple of years with Barry Odom was damn near incredible. And Deion Sanders sort of reached that pinnacle in year two. He was terrible in year one. But this whole notion that, hey, you know what, we can turn over a roster to the tune of like 50 players. Hum along. We'll be fine. Odom did it year one, got 9 wins. Barry Odom did it year two, got 10. Plus, when he left, they got another one, 11. That was a Herculean effort. Mullen's trying to do it again with 30-plus transfers and 57 new players. You know who else is trying to do it? The guy at Sam Houston State, who I watched at times look really not cohesive. Kind of a quarterback question there. They were okay in the game. I think a lot of that score was due to the fact that UNLV lost its concentration way too many times. But that dude's trying to do it. He just got 30 guys in June. He's got like 70 new players. But what I'm getting to is Bill Belichick. And Belichick, hey, arguably one of the top five coaches in the history of the National Football League. Had he been allowed to stay around, maybe it would have taken him another, 3 years to get the all-time wins record. I don't think he's ever going back to the NFL. But the thought was, I mean, this is child's play. It's Bill Belichick. He's going to go down to college and just freaking dominate. Yeah, not the case. Not the case. It's not easy. And especially when you turn over your roster to the tune of 70 new players. First of all, you have to be awesome at, one, recruiting, and more importantly, talent evaluation. And two, you want to talk about coaching chops. To pull together a team of 70 new players with like 6 weeks in the spring and 4 weeks in what we'll call the fall in August to be really good out of the gates is damn near impossible. And man, North Carolina came out and they went right down the field. They're like, oh man, the dream is going to be realized for North Carolina fans right down the field, just gashing the TCU defense. Give me some highlights here in a second. Now, I want you to remember that I got to look up the date. It was probably about 3 weeks ago. We played a conversation with Colin Cowherd and Joel Klatt. And I don't think Cowherd was doing a bit. But he said that Belichick was better than 99% of the college coaches. He said that the schedule was not challenging. Hurd said that North Carolina could cruise to 9 wins. And I remember playing those, and I'm like, they're the 8th pick by the books in the ACC. Their over-under is sitting around 7. They were 6-7 a year ago. A little bit of improvement with an entirely new roster would be monumental. And then we watched yesterday, and it was messy football. They got punched in the face repeatedly, and it just got uglier and uglier.
Hoover puts it right on the money. What a throw to Jordan Dwyer, and the Horned Frogs have answered 27 yards.
They should coast to 9 wins.
He did say they should coast to 9 wins. That was a deep shot. And here's coaching. TCU isolated a kid, and I'm not saying the kid can't play. But it's a cornerback who is a transfer in from Idaho. Idaho had a pretty good year last year. Got Jason Eck the job at New Mexico. But that was a deep shot touchdown. And then it just kept getting worse and worse.
Third down, Lopez to the outside, and it's intercepted. And it's going to be a walk-in touchdown for the veteran Bud Clark. His 12th career pick, and TCU gets the ball right back and punches it in for six.
Well, they should coast to nine wins.
They should coast to nine wins. Child's play on that one. Gio Lopez was playing quarterback. He's a transfer in. Talent evaluation. Personnel judgment. You have to pick the right guys. And Gio Lopez looked way out of his league last night. They've got Max Johnson, who snapped his leg last year, Brad Johnson's son. He'll probably get some playing time. I do want to point out that there was a guy very late in the recruiting process who was available. And I don't know if UNC kicked the tires. I don't know if Belichick bothered. I don't know if Michael Lombardi, the GM, did his research. But you watch what Jake Retzlaff does, the former BYU quarterback with Tulane, because he looked real nice against Northwestern. But last night, as I said, kept getting uglier and uglier, a pick six. And this one, you talk about a lack of gap integrity. Ugh.
As Kevorian Barnes is out the gate, inside the 30, to the 10. Touchdown TCU, 75 yards and no flags.
Well, they should coast to nine wins.
They should coast to nine wins. Play me the last one here, as at that point, the brakes are getting beat off you. You turn to the sideline, and Mr. Mumbler, he ain't got nothing to say because he's overwhelmed. The talent evaluator, I'm sure, is watching the game, and Mike Lombardi, he's overwhelmed. TCU's a legit program, like a legit program, and 48-14 was the final. I'll tell you what, Belichick is actually lucky that Dykes didn't freaking pour it on in the fourth quarter.
Ball is loose, a scoop and a score, and racing for the end zone is Devin Deal. To borrow from my friend Rich Eisen, and TCU has busted out the whooping stick.
They should coast to nine wins.
Do I have to say it again? They should coast to nine wins. That's not going to happen. Now, I'm not going to do the sky is falling today. That's what happens when you've got 70 new players and you're going against a legit top 40 program and you're probably punching a little above your weight. You've got a coaching staff that is trying, and they have some experienced guys. I will tell you, I'm also very bothered by the Nepo element of the staff. Steve Belichick is the DC. Another Belichick boy is the defensive backs coach. There's a Lombardi on the staff. That team looked unprepared, unmotivated after the bad start. There were way more mistakes beyond that. It was a freaking disaster. And I think you know where I'm going with this. I told you so. This is going to be a real effort. No one in college football gives a rat's ass who Bill Belichick is. I'm not even sure the kids do on his team, but you're going to start hearing the excuses like, oh, you got to give him a couple years, the recruiting. Okay, we're going to measure him. We're going to measure him against other programs that had pretty quick turnarounds. It's very rare, because I'll give you one, and he'll tell you how good he is. And this is unfair, but Kirk Cignetti last year at Indiana did a hell of a job. A hell of a job. It ain't that easy. And by the way, Belichick, a few years ago, Patriots. Arguably the greatest coach in the history of the National Football League. Kirk Cignetti couldn't get a chance, pushing 60, FCS.
Mm-hmm. You know what? And you're right. We shouldn't blow it all up and say the season's lost for UNC, just like we would for, you know, Texas and I guess Alabama. It's week one. It's the first game of the season. It's not over. But there are things in this game that really, there's a bit of a call for concern with this Belichick team. I mean, you looked at how the game started. That was a great opening drive. Gio Lopez driving them down to get that first score. But then you look as the game went on. I mean, what was the stat? Lopez didn't complete a pass for over an hour of gameplay.
2 hours. Nearly 2 hours did not complete a pass. And here's the other thing that happens during games, just like in the NFL. There's adjustments. College coaches are not morons. And after that first drive, TCU nutted up. They dedicated themselves to the run more. I'll give you the other disappointing thing. You're down. You're still within kind of hailing distance coming out in the second half. 12 seconds in, they bust that touchdown run. Like, what the hell were you doing in the locker room? These guys are ready, Bill. Come on, Belichick.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Crazy college football weekend. Alabama loses. Bill Belichick shamed on TV last night. I will take up for a little bit. There's some Jordan Hudson stuff, which is really absurd, but this is the internet now. Griffin, Cofield. Yeah, so TCU goes out, beats the brakes off of North Carolina. It ain't going to be easy. A lot of arrogance, especially from the Lombardi guy who was here in town doing radio. It's going to take a while. It's going to take a while, folks. Doesn't mean they're not going to have a season where they can win 6 or 7 games, but that was an eye-opener, and now they got to make a lot of changes. Obviously, have to get a lot more disciplined. And as you and I were discussing, gap integrity is going to be a big term here because I don't think it's discussed enough. And Caleb Herring's going to get into that later on. What you do up front with whatever you're playing, if you want to play a 4-1-6, a 4-2-5, a 4-3, a 3-4, whatever, that front 5, 6, or 7 has to do what they're supposed to do, or you get ridiculous plays in the run game. Right? How many times did you F up on the defensive line, either not holding the edge or getting pushed in because you're not protecting your gap, and then all of a sudden you look up and you're like, wait, how did a guy just bust off a 15-yard run plus?
Too many times to count, and I can tell you right now, I never got rung out more than when I was playing DN, and I was, I was in charge of controlling the edge, like you said, making sure the quarterback wasn't able to get out of the pocket. Or in the run game, when let's say I was playing a 3-tech and I had to watch out for the B gap. If you aren't doing your job, which is if you're a defensive tackle, you're going too far upfield against the run, you're putting your defense at risk. If you are going outside and you're not keeping contained, you're, again, putting the entire defense, the entire team at risk. It's all about gap responsibility. It's all about your assignment.
It's your job.
Exactly.
And while Aaron Donald is, the greatest defensive tackle arguably in the history of the sport, and you saw the glamorous plays, the sacks, a lot of times he just did a great job of taking on a double team and making sure there was space for someone else to make the tackle, but also making sure there wasn't a massive hole to run through, and we saw that a lot in the North Carolina game, which brings us to, and I'll get to the Bama stuff in a little bit, which brings us to the UNLV effort. I mean, you can feel this is a different era of UNLV football. Now, I don't know if that means they're going to win 10 games this year or, hell, they could finish 5-7. I've seen some things that would suggest they could have a really good season. I've seen some other things that could suggest, that will suggest, they may be a 500 team. And Dan Mullen fully recognizes what's going on. Now, he's positive about some of the things that have happened, and we're going to mention it. They deserve a feather in their cap. Again, 57 new players. And they've come together pretty well enough to win the first two games. I will point out, Idaho State took them to the brink, 38-31 in week 0. Idaho State this week took on Southern Utah and got slaughtered. They lost 46-24. They ran for, I think it was a total of 24 yards against Southern Utah, Idaho State did. They ran for 160 against UNLV. And that is one of the big things going into this game. We just talked about gap integrity. UNLV's got a lot of things to shore up on defense. And for the most part, they actually, the first drive for Sam Houston State went right down the field, buzzsaw. And you're like, okay, this is going to be tough. This quarterback can run. It's going to be rough. Then for the next almost two quarters, nothing. They gave up a total of 332 yards on defense. You'd want to do better against the Sam Houston State, but that's not terrible. Here was the problem. 112 of the yards came on two plays. A 53-yard run, gap integrity issues, and a 59-yard pass that resulted because of a missed tackle on about a 7-yard out. 112 yards. So right now, it's those little things they got to shore up. They also, they fumbled an onside kick with one of their hands guys. This wound up being a 38-21 win. It never felt in jeopardy. They were up 31-7 going to the fourth quarter. But, you know, while Dan Mullen talked about the positives in his press conference yesterday, he's like, listen, we got to get better at getting rid of these mental errors.
We're trying to make the jump up again. And that, like I said, I mean, there were a lot of things that we did really well in that last game. And then there were some glaring errors. And we talked to our guys, just the little specifics. You know, it's about each play. Can we have 11 guys do their job at the highest of levels every single play? I don't need you to do anything special. Everybody just focused on doing what we're supposed to do. And if you look in the games, you look at some of the major breakdowns in the game, guys making those mistakes. And when they do, they cost you. They didn't end up costing us the game, but they could cost us a game down the road. And I think that those type of mistakes will cost us in a game like we have this week.
I'll guarantee if they have a missed tackle on the sideline that goes for another 52 yards for a touchdown, if they have gap integrity issues on a fourth and one where there's only one line of defense because everyone got sucked in and one of the linebackers kind of missed where he's supposed to be, one of the linemen missed where he's supposed to be, and they fumble an onside kick, they will lose three or four games this year. Now, again, let's put this all in perspective. This is a program 5 years ago where you're like, please win six games once. Just get to a bowl game. And now we're grading them on a much tougher scale here where the expectation is try to win the Mountain West Conference, try to get the win in that title game, try to get into the CFP. That's freaking really cool. But it does change our football analysis. You can't be as easy as you know you used to be. It's like, mistakes happen. Like, mistakes can't happen. And Dan Mullen has those expectations. But yeah, they walked away. These actually turned out to be two really good wins, Griffin, because of this. You're winning games, but you have all these teachable moments. And really, there's almost no one who can be satisfied and look at a game and go, I was perfect. Even Anthony Calandria, who is right now the number five PFF quarterback in the country, he's completing 78% of his passes. He had a pass in the second half where he tried to lob one down the sideline, underthrew it by about 3 yards, and it got intercepted and gave Sam Houston State more life. So even him, yeah, he was 19-23, two touchdowns, had a touchdown run. It's like even he knows he's got to get better.
Yeah, 100%. But then again, let's put it in perspective. Moving that Idaho State game for Canelo Crawford,
that's a good point,
kind of has been a benefit for them.
Okay.
You get two opponents to start off your season in Sam Houston and Idaho State. Not the most high caliber opponents, but they're good enough to where you play, you're going to be able to see your errors, you're going to be able to fix them. So getting out there and playing in these first two games, I feel like helps UNLV a lot, especially for this week when they face UCLA after seeing what UCLA went through going up against Utah. I think it's a very perfect kind of position for the Rebels where they are, again, able, they get 2 weeks worth of film to be able to look over and see what their faults are, see what they can improve on. And then they also get to, you know, I think UCLA, despite that loss to Utah, UCLA is still a game where the Rebels are going to have to get up, or, you know, it's a game where you really hope Allegiant Stadium is filled and the fans are engaged, because it's not going to be a Utah versus UCLA.
Can't make mistakes.
Cannot.
And Utah's good. They're physical. And there are things I saw with Nico where I'm like, okay, that's, again, is why I get why he was a five-star prospect, why he's an NFL prospect. As the week goes along, we'll talk more about Nico Iamalieva, the quarterback from Tennessee, well, from California, went to Tennessee, came back to UCLA for this season and the future. Clock is ticking. Circa with a big contest, Circa Million, Circa Survivor, no rake, all the money's going to go into the prize pool. There's a guaranteed $6 million for Circa Million. $1,000 an entry. We're in that one. Cofield and Company. You pick five teams every week against the spread. Circa Survivor, just try to survive. You got to pick straight up winner each week. You don't, you're eliminated. It's hard, man. $1,000 to get in, but there's $15 million guaranteed to the winner or winners, and that thing could be pushing towards $17, $18, $19, $20 million pot by the end of the week. But you got to register now. Deadline Saturday at 2 o'clock. Any Circa Sportsbook in the state of Nevada. Get in there to Circa Sports, Circa Million, and Circa Survivor.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
So very interesting times around college football. We got a big one in town with UCLA taking on UNLV, UNLVtickets.com. We'll have ticket giveaway a little later in the program. That's at Allegiant, 5 o'clock kickoff, 4 o'clock with the Ted Wiens pregame show. We opened the show kind of busting chops on Bill Belichick and some national people who thought Belichick would come down to college football and just dominate because he's a great coach. Different game, rebuilding program, transfer portal. You're trying to motivate kids who are 18 to 23 years old. It's different. It's very different. And I'll tell you, if Belichick flops, everything goes in cycles. Whatever's hot is hot, right? If Belichick flops this year, then other people who may want to come to college football with NFL experience might not work out. They might not be welcome. I thought this was really interesting, and I would be willing to bet this, especially with how strong the take is. This is the Volume Podcast Network with John Middlecoff. This was before the college football season started because he'll make a reference to Florida State possibly having a bad season. And he talks about the very damaged John Gruden from a rep standpoint next year that he'll be coaching college football.
My biggest prediction in college football is that John Gruden will be coaching in 2026 in college. And I would be stunned if it's not the SEC. And I think the two sexy teams would be Hugh Freeze getting fired. Auburn would be interested. Arkansas, which has huge money, would definitely be interested. LSU and Florida, like, John Gruden's no dummy. Like, if you had the opportunity to pick of all the teams that would be open, you'd rather go to LSU or Florida than Arkansas or Auburn. There is a path for Florida to be good because of the quarterback. And LSU financially just might not be able to buy him out, but I think that John Gruden will be coaching in the SEC, and I guess you could throw Florida State if they have a disastrous season. He will be coaching in the South.
I think there's one job there that might take him. Again, I'm going to mention, I think Belichick's going to do a lot of damage if he goes, you know, 4-8. It's going to do a lot of damage to the NFL, former NFL coach looking for a spot, thinking that he's a big draw. LSU is not going to wind up firing Brian Kelly. They're not going to buy him out. And Brian Kelly's been doing fine. Relax. Florida will not fire Billy Napier. That's not going to happen. Auburn may fire Hugh Freeze. John Gruden is not a match. Frankly, John Gruden is not a match for a lot of these schools in the South. I mean, I guess based on why he got dumped from the NFL, as Mark Davis's hand got forced, I guess they'd welcome him, but this is a whole different ballgame. The arrogance of NFL people were like, oh, you could just go coach at LSU or Florida or Auburn or Arkansas. Maybe Arkansas. I think that's even a long shot. I'm telling you, watch how this all comes together. Where Gruden may want to get back in coaching, it's not going to be easy to become a head coach again.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, let's start breaking down the Raiders at the Patriots, host of the Autumn Windbags podcast, also one of our MMA insiders, RJ Clifford, up with Cofield and Griffin here on this Tuesday. RJ.
It is game week. Are we ready?
Yes.
Are we excited? Are we feeling it?
Finally.
Oh, man, I'm tingly.
So tired of camp stories and off-season stories and speculation. Let's play some real football here. But one of the angles we want to hit is actually slightly off the field and upstairs, and you are very much into the Josh McDaniel, Pat Graham battle.
Yes. So obviously, you know, Josh McDaniels, former head coach of the Raiders, is now over at OC with the Patriots. And honestly, the greatest contribution that Josh McDaniels gave to the Raiders was bringing over Patrick Graham, our defensive coordinator. And now they're going against each other. Now, we hate Josh McDaniels. He's terrible, and he's It's not even like he did his best and didn't work out. Like Antonio Pierce, like we're kind of forgiven. Like he was just in over his head. It wasn't his fault. Josh McDaniels was just a jerk. And so this defense, the Raiders defense, probably not going to be good this year. I don't care if the Raiders are a bad defense for weeks 2 through 18. I just need them to be able to beat Josh McDaniels. I just need the defense to show up and shove it in Josh McDaniels' face. McDaniels has never, ever been successful as a coach without Bill Belichick. And it won't happen again on Sunday.
I mean, let's be fair. What does he have to work with? Who do you fear on the Patriots' side?
There's not a lot to fear. I mean, maybe the running backs will get something going. They're kind of a little bit like the Raiders, right? They're just like trying to get younger, trying to build for the future. They got a ridiculous amount of cap space. They're both kind of like in similar situations. So, I mean, honestly, it's like as cocky as I feel like some of the Patriots writers are about the Raiders offense, like it's what is the Pats offense going to offer, you know?
Yeah, I found that funny. We had pulled a cut from some media outlet, and guy was talking about the fact that really there's no one to fear because Christian Gonzalez might be out for the game, and it's like, they don't need him. All they have is Jacoby Myers and Trey Tucker and Dante Thornton, and I don't even think they mentioned Jack Besh. When you saw those comments, did you think, well, that's not really a big deal. The Patriots reporter is actually right. The wide receiving core, until we see what they can do, really isn't that dangerous.
I would say the receiving core isn't that dangerous, but it doesn't mean the pass catchers aren't, right? Obviously, you got the best tight end in football and Brock Bowers, and Michael Mayer is supposed to be a big part of the game. Ashton Jeanty is very underrated coming out of the backfield. And, I mean, look, there isn't anyone that can cover Brock Bowers one-on-one. Not one. You're either a speedy cornerback that's too small and he's going to bully you, or you're a thicker, stronger linebacker and he's going to outshift you. Like, he's just not coverable. So, and also, like, the Pats, like, they suck. Like, where's this cockiness coming from? At least Raiders writers are just kind of like, yeah, you know, it's a team trying to build. What are we going to talk trash about? Pats, man. It's, I guess, a couple decades of superiority will get you cocky for the rest of time.
The pass game to Mayer or Bowers or Jacoby Myers or the other receivers is much more dangerous if they have the threat of the run. Obviously, play action is going to help that. Sucking guys in because Ashton Jeanty is killing them on the ground. But here's the thing. Was that the real Chip Kelly we saw in the preseason, or was he playing vanilla just because it was a preseason?
Yeah, I think it was pretty clear that Chip Kelly was just like, here's the most basic run scheme that you can possibly imagine. We're not giving away anything, and rightfully so, right? Like, new quarterback, new head coach, new offensive coordinator, new running back. Like, it should all be a complete mystery. Like, nobody on the defensive side of the Patriots should know what's going to be coming to them this way. So, and I said this way when they signed Chip Kelly. It's like, I don't know if Chip Kelly can make the Raiders running game good, but I can guarantee you it'll be fun. It'll be interesting. There'll be linebacker. There'll be guards pulling. There'll be shifts. There'll be reverses. Chip Kelly likes to set traps when he'll do, you know, like he'll run some run plays for the first like 3 weeks of the season and then do a counter to that in weeks 9 through 10. Like we saw him do that with Ohio State last season in college. So it's going to be really, really fun. Again, it was the worst running game in football last season. And then if that's able to turn around a dime, that'd be a miracle. But at least it'll be fun. At least it'll be watchable. And we'll get to see some cool stuff.
Raiders at the Patriots this weekend. 2.5-point dog. RJ Clifford talks Raiders on the Autumn Windbag podcast. He joins us on Tuesdays on Cofield and Company. All right, Jacoby Myers, is this real drama? Is there any chance he's not targeted as much? Is his head on right?
It's a tough one, right? Because I don't think this stemmed from like an issue, like a problem. This isn't like what happened in Dallas where it got personal and like, you know, like get rid of the money, move on. Well, with Jacoby Myers, it was just basically like he was coming off arguably the best season that he'll ever have in his career, and he wants to get paid off the back of it. Makes total sense. 1 year left on his deal. I think you saw the writing on the wall where they drafted Jack Betch in the second round, who kind of is Jacoby Myers, probably to replace him. And he's like, look, I want to get paid now after that year. So when it's all business and it's less emotional, it doesn't lead me to believe that that'll be a massive issue. But if Chip Kelly or Pete Carroll want to send a message and be like, yeah, Besh, like, we brought you in to replace Jacoby, and so that's what you're going to do.
I know you can't stand Josh McDaniels. I can't either, and I understand the tie because of the Raiders. But Belichick, of course, ran the evil empire for the longest time. He goes down to college football, and I say down, I'm laughing about it because it's not down. It's going to be really hard for him. How much of Monday's TCU-North Carolina game did you watch, and where was Jordan Hudson looking all disappointed on camera?
Yeah, I got to watch about 2.5 to 3 quarters of it, and that was about 2 more quarters than you really needed to know how that game was going to go, right? Just a show lacking. And I think it's just a matter of Bill Belichick. You need to be more cutting edge with that. Even Pete Carroll, right? He's like, oh, we're going to involve all these different schemes and these forward-thinking people. Like, you can be old and still be forward-thinking. Like, Bill Belichick is just like, he just wants football to be in the 60s, and he's doing it that way. I mean, it's all just like his friends and relatives and kids, all part of that program, and just this kind of like fuddy-duddy old school way of everything. And it's like this college football is changing too fast, man. He's just not figuring it out. And you'd think having a girlfriend a third his age would help him be more forward thinking, but I guess not.
Well, I'm not saying this to be dirty about it, but he needs all the help he can with recruiting. So he better, because you mentioned Pete Carroll, yeah, he had a good staff. He was a good coach in college, but he had the Jimmys and Joes. So he was loaded in terms of talent. So Belichick's going to have to go nose to the grindstone, or his staff is, to get better players in the future. And again, the season's not over. It's only one game. They certainly can bounce back and potentially win, whatever, 7 or 8 games. I don't think they will. I think they're about a 500 team. All right, MMA with RJ Clifford. First of all, UFC Paris is coming up. What are we watching for?
So it's the tides of mixed martial arts are starting to shift eastward. That's been going on for a long time, where like the Russians, Dagestanis, Chechenians, all those great combat sports and wrestlers are always being good. But now there's going to be 4 different champions from European regional promotions making their UFC debuts on Saturday. And that's been a big shift, whereas like it's hard for anything other than the UFC, any promotion in North America, to make any waves at all. It is booming regionally in Europe. It's crazy. They're doing 20, 30, 40,000 foot stadiums. Wow. for these regional shows. It's incredible. So you're not going to have growing talent in a region without some grassroots regional shows doing it. So depending on the success of all these young guys coming in, we'll see. And also because the promotions are successful, that doesn't mean that their fighters are getting paid a lot. We see this happen with Bellator former champions. They never seem to do any good in the UFC. Well, that's because they spent their primes in Bellator, right? They didn't come to the UFC till they were in their mid-30s. Right. All 4 of these champions coming over are 30, 27, 27, and 27. So we got young prospects who already have championship experience.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Yep.
I have complained about some of the Eastern Bloc fighters and wrestlers and human blankets, but I saw you get into a good discussion on Twitter. And you put out, I'll call them, some malicious facts, some stats, which actually counters that thought that wrestling has actually become less of a factor. Striking is better than it's ever been.
So lay and pray, and people who have been around mixed martial arts for a while know that it's just the bane of the sport. A wrestler takes a guy down and just holds him down for the course of a round just to win the round 10-9, doesn't do damage, doesn't strike, doesn't try to get submissions. That was a huge chunk of mixed martial arts for a long time. And it technically still is around. Obviously, Khamzat Chimaev just did that in a championship fight in Chicago. But it's nearly extinct, by every tangible metric. That style of fighting is dissipating more and more every single year. Fighters are getting better at getting up. The judging criteria is shifting more towards damage over control. It's disappearing. So the thing I quoted was Nick Diaz was talking about this 10 years ago before he fought George St. Pierre. Uh-huh. And obviously he's planting the seeds because he knew George St. Pierre was going to out-wrestle him. So he's complaining, oh, wrestling is going to ruin the sport. And the poster said he predicted this. I'm like, no. It's the opposite. It's literally the opposite. Yeah. Khamzat Chimaev did it in the championship fight a couple weeks ago. Name the last time someone just laid and prayed on a fighter. In the last 10, 20 UFC events, how many fights can you say, yep, that was a lay and pray? It's just not true. I'm telling you, the Nick Diaz mind control ability over fans, it needs to be studied in the lab. It's unbelievable.
Okay, we got to close on this one. This is important. These fights are making money, and they do draw interest. Tony Ferguson, out of MMA. I always thought he was a pretty good striker. Was matched up against this guy, Salt Papi, who is, frankly, a guy who lost weight. He still weighs 180. I think he could fight at 150 or 160. He got in there with Tony Ferguson in one of these, you know, influencer fights, and his head was like a friggin' pinata after the fight because it got stopped. He's like, oh, early stoppage. Bro, you're going to die. You were going to die in this. And I got to tell you, one of the most embarrassing things about the pre-fight was Paul Felder and Bisping on with someone, and Felder went along with this theme like, oh, yeah, Tony's probably going to lose this. And then when you watch the fight, you're like, this is a overweight fatty who just started boxing against a professional athlete.
Unlike other professional sports, right? Like if you're in the NFL and you've been in, let's say you've been in the NFL for 10 years and you slowly kind of deteriorate and you don't get quite as good, they stop calling, you stop having a job, and that's why you retire. Yep. In combat sports, if you have a name, they will always be some promoter somewhere, whether it's bare knuckle or power slap or what, 3-on-1 versus MMA in some Thailand bar. Someone will give you a paycheck if you have a name, and it's up to the people around that fighter to make sure they, you know, put the kibosh on it at the right time. Luckily for Tony Ferguson, they kind of knew what they were getting into. He hadn't won a fight in like half a decade, and so he got that. So yeah,
take the money. Take the money. My concern is, even I don't know what kind of license they have. This guy is, come on, man. This is like a poor man's Jake Paul. He should not be in there with Tony Ferguson.
Yeah. Tony Ferguson losing to, you know, some of the best lightweights of all time, that, and that causes his losing streak. That doesn't mean he could beat the, you know, the miracle, you know, biggest loser dudes.
RJ, you're the best, man. Enjoy the game this weekend. Good luck to your Raiders, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Talk to you later.
There he is, RJ Clifford, who did fight professionally, was an All-American wrestler at San Francisco State. I didn't get to ask him. Someone tweeted at him, someone claiming they were from Wales, and they were in this wrestling argument. And the person said, wrestling hasn't taken over. Okay, sweetheart. I'm like, I don't know how, if you can actually fight, how you control yourself on social media.